Hello. How are you both?
All good, thank you. How are you?
Good. Episode 4, flying by.
Time flies when you're having fun, doesn't it?
It does. It does.
What's new? Boats, what have you been up to?
Not much, really. You know, just same old. To be fair, I'm excited that, obviously, we come out of, restrictions are eased from Monday. So, yeah, I'm happy about that.
Get a haircut. I can go get my hair dyed professionally again.
Rob, you've got a back injury.
I have. The technical term is it's buggered. I did it stretching on Wednesday. I mean, I'm definitely getting old. So I've been hobbling around. But I'm a fighter, Claire. You know what I mean?
Maybe you need to go back to your, you know, prison style MDF bed and that would sort it out.
I think that's it. My bed's too comfy.
Anyone
out there, can you send me 2 inches of foam and a hard wood board for me to lay on, please?
What, the blue mattress?
Blue mattresses.
It was good for you. They were good for your back, though.
They were good for your back. But you know what? Do you know what I didn't like? Because they were obviously, for those listeners that haven't seen a prison mattress, they are that kind of, not laminated. What's the word? It's that the material is like rubbery. Yeah. So that they're obviously
wiped clean.
Yeah. Wiped clean. God, I got a shudder saying
like a gym mat.
They're a gym mat.
Come summer and your ill-fitting sheet is on there. Oh my God, the sweat. Yeah. I mean, that was particularly nasty. Yeah. But yeah, no. So,
Well, I'll wish the prisoners a cool summer then.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
We've got a super interesting guest today. I really enjoyed recording this one. A man who has spent 27 years behind bars, but not as an inmate, as a prison officer of varying levels along the way.
We've got a screw on. Boo.
We've got a screw on. He might not be what you expect from your usual screw. I don't know. Boats, what were your impression of officers before you went in and what was your impression afterwards?
Before I went in, I expected them to all look like skinheads, be racist, just want to beat me up. But obviously when you go in there, you find that they're actually just normal people and a lot of them are really nice, like a lot of them. And if you treat them with respect, they'll replicate that.
Rob, did you have any bad experiences of officers?
Not really bad ones, actually. I think there were, what Boat said, actually, is what you find is most of them on there are exactly that, normal people. And if you're nice to them, or polite to them at least, they'll do the same back. I think there were a couple of bad ones. I think in Wandsworth, on one of the wings I was on, there was one, she was quite renowned for being kind of quite spiteful and had just a bit erratic. But no, on the whole, my experience was very good. And yeah, like Boat said, I think we met some really good ones along the way.
So here's Andy. He's served in maximum security and BCAT prisons. He's currently working as a CM. And our chat begins with him explaining exactly what that is.
CM, short for custodial manager, is the highest ranking uniform grade you get. Next step up is governor, if that's where you're interested in going. For those of a certain age, it's PO, principal officer. It's the old PO when they had the name changes, the rank changes, but that's what it is. So it's the highest ranking officer grade you're going to get.
Okay, so that means are you kind of in charge of a specific wing, or are you overseeing kind of a whole prison, or what's kind of, in layman's terms?
My area of work at the moment is in security. I run a security group. But depending on where you're posted, you will have an overall charge of a house block, or it could be visits, or it could be the gate, it could be reception, it could be any of the areas within a prison that you'll have overall control of.
It might be helpful actually as well if you can run through the kind of various ranks and roles of the immediate people, like kind of the relevant people kind of with you that you'd be dealing with day to day.
Okay, so you've got the CM grade, you've got the governors above us. We start with the governing governor, then you have the deputy governor, and then the band 8s and band 7s. They're sort of run the prison. They make all the major decisions and keep everything ticking over. Then you've got the CMs who have X amount of responsibility, but they're responsible for their own areas. Underneath us, we've got the band 4 supervising officers. Again, for those of a certain age, that's the old senior officer grade. They do the day-to-day turning over, making sure the areas are running. So they'll be the first ones that, if you're a prisoner, they'll be your focal point of contact if you've got any issues before you reach us. Under them, you've got the band 3 officers. They're the ones that run around all over the place doing absolutely everything and probably work harder than anyone within the prison. And probably take the most flack, to be fair. But
they're the ones that put us behind our doors and unlocked us in the morning.
Exactly that. And then under them, you've got the OSGs, who should never, ever be forgotten. They have a vitally important role. Without them, we couldn't do our job. They're the ones that you'll see if you come in as a visitor. You'll see them. They'll probably check you in and search you coming in. They assist you in reception. They drive vehicles. They do absolutely everything to keep us, to enable us to do our work.
And presumably, you know, when you started out 27 years ago, you start out, I guess, like a lot of things, you start kind of at the lower rungs of that, and you kind of have worked your way up. Have you done kind of most roles in your 27 years?
Yeah, I started out as an officer. My first 18, 19 years were residential. Absolutely loved it. Absolutely, really did enjoy it. And then decided it was time to get promoted. Got promoted to senior officer, stayed on res. And then you start to diversify. I've done reception, I've done security, I've done the SEG, I've done, many jobs.
In previous episodes, Boats and I have kind of talked a lot about kind of what our routine was like when we were both serving our sentences. But I think it would be really interesting to hear kind of on the flip side, kind of what a typical day for you looks like. So would you mind kind of walking us through kind of as much as you can, start to finish, what your kind of roles and how your day looks?
Yeah, well, as an orderly officer, you're on duty at 6 o'clock. You've got the details to check, staff to organise, cuffs and keys to get issued. Once the regime is up and running, you've then got various checks to do. So you'll wander around the prison, checking obs books, signing sheets off, making sure everything's okay, confirming numbers at places like education, workshops. From then, it's just, after that, it's just managing the prison. So anything that comes up, any alarms, any phone calls, any queries, any phone calls from outside, generally come through to you as the orderly officer, and you're responsible for pretty much everything that goes on during the course of the day. I mean, obviously, you've got the governors above you. If it's that serious or you need advice, then you would go to them. But you are responsible for keeping the prison moving during the course of the day.
When you're going on like your typical day, do you kind of know typically you're like, right, well, I've got to, if I'm in at six, I've got till kind of like 6:45, 7 o'clock before it really kicks off. Is there like kind of a time that like kind of the prison wakes up, or do you have to be kind of on it from minute one?
Unless it's the weekend, Monday to Friday, from the moment you walk in to the moment you walk out, generally it's full on. Weekend, yeah, you get in at six, but the day doesn't start till 8:30. So you've got that little bit of time to settle yourself down and get yourself ready. But Monday to Friday is pretty full on.
And Andy, I remember you obviously talking about the ranks of officers and talking about OSGs and POs, SOs, CMs. And I also remember being a prisoner that it kind of, the levels of and grades of officer, do you kind of notice that it's, there's certain levels of respect that they get from the prisoners? Because I always remember that, like, OSGs, they had no stripes. So I know people used to think that they could take the piss out of them more than obviously you could take the piss out of a CM. Because I think CMs, do they have 3 stripes?
Yes.
Do you notice that?
I have to say, when I got promoted to CM, then I did notice a difference. But I think generally across the board, whatever the grade, what you give out generally is what you get back. And there's no rank in that at all. If you're decent and respectful in the main, that is mainly what you get back across the board. It's not an exact science. Sometimes that doesn't work, but always what you give out, you'll get back.
And to be fair, I can't, the way you are as a person, I can't really see prisoners being disrespectful to you, because you're actually a nice person. And I know that if I was in jail and there was a gov that was nice, I'm not going to take the piss out of him. I'm going to be nice to him back.
You're too kind. Not everybody thinks that.
No, but it's true though. And I feel like even in my jail time, being nice to officers kind of helped me, because that was getting my door open sometimes when everyone was banged out. I could get secret gym sessions and little things like that just from being nice.
What people forget is that for a minimum of 39 hours a week, if you do overtime, it can be a lot more. But for 39 hours a week, we're locked up as well. And we want our day to go as peacefully and as smoothly as we can possibly get it. None of us particularly want a lot of grief. We've all got to go home at the end of the night to a family and a normal life, as much as you can have with the shifts that you do sometimes. So it's in our best interests to do what we have to do to make the day run smoothly. And if people are polite, then you'll go out your way to help them out.
Yeah.
Is that kind of, is there like a tacit agreement in with guards, like in terms of that kind of unwritten, they're allowed to have a bit of wiggle room into, like, you know, obviously Boats, being the superstar he was, used to get 8 gym sessions, 15 no. visits a week. No. But do you know what I mean? Like, well, do you know, I mean, this might shock you, Andy, but Boats and Claire have got a theory that I'm posh.
Never.
He is.
And so they used to reckon that I'd get preferential treatment or different treatment maybe on the wing. And I think, you know, when I look back, I think, you know, there were probably some govs that did kind of seem to kind of maybe, I don't know about preferential is a bit strong, but would kind of, you could kind of possibly bend their ear a bit more and get that. Is that kind of something that's written into that kind of, when you're training up officers, is it like, look, yeah, if it's going to make your life easier, you can give a little bit here and there to someone that's been well behaved or that kind of thing? Or is that kind of trying to frown upon it because that can create more issues?
I think that's something that comes with time over experience. I think when you start, it's such a surreal environment to walk into. And if I'm honest, it was probably the most terrifying experience of my life, walking in there for the first time as an officer, not knowing what to expect. As you go through it, you build up a confidence in yourself, and you have to stay true to yourself. And what the way I might deal with things is not how someone else would comfortably deal with it. But yeah, there is a certain amount of wiggle room. But to begin with, the easiest way to start is to go straight down the line, yes or no. And then once you become confident and you understand what you can and can't get away with yourself, that's when you can work out what you can let someone else get away with. And yes, there is a certain amount of wiggle room. I'm not saying if it makes life easier, but if it doesn't cause any issues, then it doesn't matter.
Do you feel like with some of the new younger officers, where they might be a bit nervous, they might be more liable to give in to pressure?
Without a doubt. And that's not necessarily having the confidence to stand your ground, necessarily having the knowledge base to give a clear answer and deal with that from a position of strength. I also think as well now that people are joining the job a lot younger than they did before. One of the most important things, I think, in our job is to have life skills. They used to reckon the average age, the best age to start would have been around 25 and do 30 years now at 55. But I think you've now got people that are starting sort of 18, 19, 20. As a first job, and that makes it very difficult that they're dealing with a lot of people of their own age group and having to say yes, say no, enforce rules, and that in itself brings its own problems for them.
I was going to ask Andy, actually, that's very close to what your views were on programs like Unlock, which for other people that don't know is a sort of teach first idea for prisons where they're trying to get high level graduates coming into prison officer roles. And I wondered, are you able or do you have an opinion? And I guess it kind of links to what you're saying about they're likely to be younger because they're going to be fresh university graduates.
Without a shadow of a doubt, the recruitment process has changed beyond all recognition over the years. Yes, we are looking, more and more graduates are coming in because the degrees that they sit, they can't find work. It also links with what they've studied, and it can be a stopgap. They'll do 2 or 3 years to get the experience to have it on the CV. Whether I agree with it or not, I don't know. I mean, I've always said you don't need to be intelligent to be a prison officer. You just need a common sense based thing, I think, and to be a little bit of empathy and to, I don't know. So I didn't join the job from a degree base. I come off a building site. I work with a lot of people that come from the forces. You just need to be able to interact with people, which isn't always the case at the moment.
Is it right that the training programme for an officer is something like 6 weeks long? Is that right?
Around about that, yes. I know they've shut it down. When I did it, it was 9 weeks. 9 weeks in one go.
9 weeks.
Yeah, that was a long time ago. But now It has
not long.
No. And they learn different things now, which were never on the curriculum when I started.
You mentioned there that you were previously, before you were a prison officer back in the day, you were working on a building site. So I'm really interested to hear the thought process behind, you know, you're on the site, you're a bricky, whatever it was. What made you think, do you know what, I'd love to go and stand on a prison wing and get shouted at by inmates?
You know what, you're right. I don't think anyone ever goes through schooling with their career ambition to be a screw. I'd done many, many years on a building site, and I'd gone through recessions and pay cuts, and then you went back to, and then it got to another recession, and was travelling on the tube to work, and saw an advert on the tube for recruiting for prison staff. And I thought, you know what, why not? Why not? Let's go for it. And you sort of fell into it. And I think once you get into it, it's very, very hard to leave. But perversely, I'd actually spoken to my wife probably about 5 years previous to joining. I'd seen a similar advert and she was adamant, you're not doing it, you're not doing it. And if I hadn't listened to her, I would have retired at 55 on a full pension and I'd have been retired by now. But you're right. It's just something that people will see an advert and it intrigues you. And it gives, at the time, it gave job security. I went from being self-employed to being employed. I was actually strangely earning more money when I started in the prison service than I was on the building site. So it gave that. Sadly, it hasn't kept pace, I don't think. But it was really that security and something interesting.
So someone at the prison service frantically going to pump money into tube adverts now. They've seen that's how they hurt you.
not now, it's all glossy emails.
Yeah, stop the Facebook ads, get some more tube ones out.
It worked. I know a few people that joined the same way. They saw the adverts on the tube as they were travelling to work and thought, let's go for it.
Andy, when you see new officers come on now, can you kind of spot the ones that you think are going to do well and can you spot the ones that you think, oh God, they're going to struggle a bit?
Very quickly. maybe I shouldn't have answered that quickly, but yes, very, very quickly.
Can I tell you what? The inmates can. I remember a couple of times. I mean, obviously, I'm pretty streetwise and pretty tough. Boats less so. But you do remember watching them come on. And I came into prison at kind of 30, a little bit of life experience. Obviously, yeah, not from a particularly kind of rough background at all. And I was, you know, it's fucking intimidating going into prison. You know, I went into Wandsworth, mm-hmm. big old prison. My first week or two is, yeah, you are constantly kind of on edge. And I remember looking at, especially like, I couldn't believe how young some of the officers were. And yes. You just think, fuck it. I mean, they must be just so intimidated because some big old units in prison and some pretty unpredictable people. And you just think, I don't know how they're going to cope. I mean, it's just, yeah, it's tough.
Well, I look back to I can remember my first day now. And I knew I was targeted. Oh, there's a new one there. We'll go and ask him. He won't have a clue. We'll do what we tell him. And you do. And you rely very heavily on the more experienced officers to put an arm around your shoulder, if you like, or just stand behind you and say, and just give you that reassurance that you're doing okay.
Do you think that's gone a bit? Do you think that's a big problem that's gone? When you were talking about the kind of lack of continuity with staff on wings, that not only with the interaction with the inmates, that's also an issue with like team building within, you know, that and having someone that will help you like that.
Well, the other issue now is you don't necessarily now get what I would call the career screws. That, like myself, at my certain age, that 27, 28, 30 years, I just don't think people are going to be lasting any longer than between 5 and 10 years now. So you, by the time you get them experience, you get people experienced, they're looking to leave to do something else in a job that is a lot less stressful, a lot less dangerous, that pays more money. So you're just not getting that consistency through the grades now and through the years.
Do you think that's solvable?
In the current climate, no. The job needs to be made a far more attractive job than it is, despite the adverts that go out that make it look the most wonderful job of the lot. And I've seen the adverts. And to be fair, my wife got an email through from a recruiting company outlining the role of a prison officer and was she interested, and she sent it on and it looked fantastic and nothing like what I do. But when you think that for a similar sort of job in a way, you can earn more money in the police with more perks, with more chance to diversify your role, the prison isn't necessarily an attractive recruitment place now.
Which leads the question, what are you doing here, Andy?
Habit. to be fair, I think it gets to a stage, like a lot of jobs, I'm not there for the work. I'm there for the people that I work with, mm-hmm. who are a unique bunch of individuals that do a very demanding job in extremely demanding circumstances, mm-hmm. for absolutely no reward, absolutely no thanks. And you know what? I'm too stubborn to go now. I've only got a few years left, and I could wander off into the sunset quite happy with what I've achieved. But I have to say, in 27 years, despite it being grim, despite it being probably in a lot of people's eyes one of the worst jobs you can ever have, I've loved every minute of it. And I just like the people that I work with, to be fair.
To be clear, are you talking about officers or inmates?
Do you know what, Rob? Both. To be fair, both. Both. I've met some of the most fantastic people, both sides of the door.
I can imagine it being fulfilling.
A lot of people in prison there, but for the grace of God, go I. We could all do something in life that puts us the other side of the door. I'm never likely to go and commit a major armed robbery or anything like that, but we could all put ourselves in a position where there, but for the grace of God, go I, that could be me.
Just in terms of the variety of people you meet, there must be some encounters that you have with prisoners where you get on really well with. I mean, you know, you mentioned before the importance of building a rapport. You know, do you identify people that you think actually there could be a more natural friendship here? And in those circumstances, do you have to find yourself distancing to be more professional, or do you just roll with it, or has that happened?
I think there's definitely been a couple of stages where you deal with people that you go very well with, that you think to yourself, do you know what, in a different life, if I met you outside, we could have a very good friendship, and I could go for a beer with you, and I could get with you, and you would do that quite happily. But I think at work you have to keep what I would call a professional distance, and you can't let yourself become too attached, because that then not only can make life difficult if you have to say no for something, but it can also put pressure on that individual if they seem to be very friendly with a prison officer, or the perception is that, oh, he's giving him that because he likes him and he's his mate. It's not fair on individuals as prisoners, so you have to keep that professional distance.
Yeah. Okay. And Andy, obviously from talking to you, obviously we know that your job hasn't been easy, but has there ever been days when you've just thought, fuck this? There's ever been days you've been driving and you think, why am I doing this? Why am I going to put up with people chatting shit to me?
I've never had days going into work when I feel that. Admittedly, I'd be lying if I said there have been days when I haven't gone home and thought, you know what, I'm going to have a beer here and I can't be doing this anymore. But then you have a sleep and you get up, you go back in, and you're back at work, and it just becomes the norm. I don't think in 27 years I've seriously ever considered thinking, that's it, I'm going to go and do something else. And I think part of that is the variety of the people you meet, and that's what keeps you going in.
Yeah, I mean, on that, if we're talking about when we're going to inmates, is there one kind of habit or kind of behaviour that you find really like kind of ground you down a bit in your 27 years? One thing that kind of just, no matter what you're trying to set your mind to, it just pisses you off?
Yeah, any prisoner that will not take no for an answer. And if they start with me and they say, no, you can't do that. And then they go to someone else and then to someone else. And by day three, they're back to you for the same thing. And they just will not take no for an answer. And you just, even the most patient of people will just, you know what, go away.
What's that request more often than not for?
Now, that's a good question. Generally, there's many, but generally, employment for the job that they're not totally suitable for, and they just cannot understand why they can't have that job.
Fair.
Andy, have you ever had to work on a VP wing, like a vulnerable prisoners wing? Do you feel weird being around those kind of people, or do you just see it as it's just work? I'm just doing my job.
So I'll just stop you there to explain to our listeners what the VP wing is. So as Boat said, it stands for vulnerable prisoners. For the most part, this is often where sex offenders or those serving sexual offences are housed in order to keep themselves safe from others. Also, sometimes, you know, you find particularly vulnerable people there who might struggle on the wing. Would you agree that, like, you know, on the whole, it's probably seen to be where primarily with people with sexual offences?
Without a doubt. And that's predominantly what it's there for. Vulnerable prisoners will cover quite a broad range. And as you touched on, people that are under threat for being in debt, poor copers that just can't be put on a normal wing with a normal population will be on there. But yes, I have worked on a vulnerable prisoners unit, and being a father of a young child at that time, I didn't last on there. It wasn't for me. I had to go to my PO at the time and say, I can't do this because I cannot remain professional.
So do you think it's better not knowing what some of them have done?
Without a shadow of a doubt. Because you then treat people as individuals. And I have to say, I was advised that at a very early stage in my career, don't ask what people are in for. And that's good advice that I've taken, and I've never once asked. If people volunteer that information, that's fine. But I've never knowingly gone looking for that information, because we're human at the end of the day. And some things are more personal to members of staff than others. It could be something like, take the VP side of it away. It could be that someone's sister's been mugged for a phone, and then you find out that the person you're dealing with is in for that. And it is very hard to disassociate yourself from that, because officers are human beings as well, and they have the same thoughts that you will have, and they go through the same emotions. And just because they're in uniform, sometimes it's very difficult to disassociate from that.
Yeah, I think it's the one kind of almost universal kind of line in the sand that from everyone I've kind of spoken to, both inside and outside, that kind of, when you go into those kind of offences, that it's, I haven't met anyone yet that is kind of, you know, has a different reaction. So it's, yeah, I guess and someone's got to, though, I guess, in the prisons, haven't they? You know, someone's got, you know, there's got to be a group of people that man those wings. Is that now, you know, in your role now, is that difficult managing those officers that have got to work on those? Do you kind of, I guess, pass your own experiences down?
Again, if I'm being brutally honest, if you work on a VP wing, it's seen as an easier place to work. The problems on there are different. Because of the nature of their offences, they generally tend not to be quite as challenging. Their requests are different. You watch for different things, but generally they tend to keep themselves to themselves. So it is a quieter area to work generally.
Interesting.
And they're on, and sometimes they're on better wings as well. Because I know at Hyderdown, they had the brand new wing, like, brand new, looked good. Like, it seemed like they were living better than everyone else.
Not where I am. Everywhere's exactly the same, in the same state of disrepair.
Okay. when I was in Wandsworth, we got moved on to C Wing. So when I was on there, C Wing was split in half. So half of it was the just what they called the non-smoking wing, which was the wing I was on. And then the other half was the VP's wing. And it was in theory the nicest wing in the prison. You had separate toilets in there.
It's the newest at Wandsworth, and it was the longest wing in Europe at one stage before they put the gates in.
Well, there you go. Every day's a school day. Did not know that.
Andy, I was gonna ask you as well. Like, I think from my experiences, a good gov to me as a gov, like, what resonates in you is that you're empathetic, and you're someone who I can imagine when you open the door, you're going to say good morning. It's the little things like that will make you, draw you towards a gov. But what do you think makes a good governor, and what makes you be able to get on with the prisoners?
I think the biggest thing straight away, without even thinking, would be honesty. It's when you start telling lies, when you start saying you can't do that because, and that's not, because you'll always get found out. It's to be honest. It's being able to deliver bad news as well as good. It's very easy to give out all the plaudits and give out the nice stuff. But there are times when you've got to say, do you know what, folks, I'm sorry, you can't have that today. But the reason you can't have that today is this reason. And be honest and deliver it in a way that's consistent. Yeah. Also, I think you need consistency. And it's no good me saying to you, you can have one thing, and then going to Rob and saying, sorry, you can't have that, but you've asked for the same thing. So consistency and honesty, I think, is probably above all the most important qualities you can have.
Yeah, because at least if you've got a gov who's a prick, at least you know where you stand with him. So you get that consistent. You get that consistency with it. It's true, though. If you know,
you're right.
No one's a prick. Yeah.
If you know, give a wide berth.
Yeah, but if you're quite right to coin a phrase. If you're a prick to everyone, then you're being consistent.
Yeah.
And to be fair, some people will set out to be like that because people will leave you alone.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're approachable, then everybody comes to you. If you're a prick, people won't.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
And if you're a prick, you might get shitted on.
Quite possibly.
Quite possibly, yeah. Yeah.
And now we don't wear the hats, it's a bit more difficult. We've got to be careful.
Exactly. Have you ever kind of really felt scared? Have you ever had times where you've experienced any kind of like big outbreaks of violence on wings? Or have you ever had kind of, real kind of seat your pants moments?
Oh, many, many. And anyone that says they've never been scared in there is lying. As I was told when I started, the job is 99% bored and 1% sheer terror. And you never know when that 1% is coming. But I've had days when I've been driving into work and all the intelligence we've been given is that the area that we're working on is going to go off in a big way. And there's been a major incident. So you walk in with trepidation, you do your briefing, and then you just go and get on with it and hope and hope above hope that it doesn't happen. I've been in situations as a CNR, advanced qualified, you'd be called out to riots to go and deal with those. And that's nothing like the training when you've got a code word, you shout out and everybody stops. And there's things being thrown at you and you see petrol bombs going around and big lumps of metal come flying over the top landing that you've got your shield, you've got to try and deflect it. We've had an incident where a whole spur has gone up and we've had to get everybody in to clear it. It can be absolutely terrifying, but fortunately, that is such a minimal part of it that people will glorify and people will remember. But it is probably 1% of my 27 years has been that. The rest has been just like going out with your mates and having a chat and sitting down drinking tea with people and just generally passing the time of day.
Speaking of bits that are probably only a very small part of the job but get quite a lot of press, have you ever encountered any kind of, for lack of a better phrase, kind of corrupt officers, experience of people trying to bring things into the prisons? It's something that gets talked about a lot. I never witnessed it in there. I never really even heard of it too much, I don't think, anywhere there. But is that something you've kind of seen in your time?
Yeah. Obviously, with the security background, you see things as well. It does happen, but again, it is such a minimal part of it. But in all walks of life, you're going to get good and bad. And sadly, that's the same in uniform as well. Prison service, police, there's always going to be a small percentage that are there for the wrong reasons.
And off that, I guess it's worth probably at that point touching on, when we talk about things being brought in, we're not talking about birthday cakes normally. It's usually kind of, we're talking about, probably.
Yeah.
Although I did have a nice birthday cake in there, although I think Barry and Alex made it for me, which was nice. I think we're talking, you're talking about drugs, which is obviously a big, big issue within the prisons. I think, it's probably the most talked about issue.
Yes.
How severe do you see the problem as in your experience?
We're quite fortunate in where I work in as much. We do have a problem. It'd be wrong to say we don't. But compared to a lot of other prisons, we get off quite lightly. I think the biggest issue now is spice, whereas before it used to be cannabis, heroin, spice. Now it is a huge problem because it's very hard to detect. It comes in sprayed on paper. There's a huge, huge profit to be made with spice. We're talking hundreds of pounds for an A4 sheet of paper. My concern is that we're going to get lots of deaths from that because we see, again, not all the time, but we see people, prisoners being used as guinea pigs, people that you would know have a major drug habit and try that and it because spice the components change on a regular basis so no one really knows what's in it and people are being given free hits of spice to see what the reaction is and I've attended many where people are laying on the floor having a fit foaming at the mouth and then being taken to outside hospital and it is quite scary for me the end result or what it could be with this.
I remember there wasn't a problem at any of the prisons I went to. I mean, you could literally get as much as you wanted. I, I, I remember in Rochester in particular, there was where, I mean, high down, I think, I remember walking out my first day onto the landing and I was like, what the fuck is this place? I mean, it was like the Land of the Living Dead. I mean, everyone was off their face. Mm. And that was having come from Wandsworth. And at Wandsworth, I mean, the smell of weed was so strong the whole time. Mm. But it just seemed like people were chilled and fine. And then going to high down, everyone was on spice. And then went to Rochester. And I don't know if this is accurate, but they were saying that, you know, I think they were saying that there was only like a small number of ambulances on call in the Rochester area. And one of them was dedicated to the prison. You know, we're talking about, you know, from like three or four ambulances, like a quarter of them are dedicated to the prison because they would just be doing shuttle runs back and forth with people going over from spice, heart attacks. I think someone might have even died when we were there. I mean, it was, yeah, I mean, the scale of the problem is not to be kind of underestimated, I don't think, on that front.
And I've heard that, as I say, we're in a position where we're not as bad as that, but you hear experiences from people in other prisons and it's horrendous. And it's worrying at what stage are people going to realise that we shouldn't be doing that? And I know that might be a little bit naive because it's an income for some people and it's a way of getting through your sentence. I know that. I totally get that. But people are going to die because of spice, more so than cannabis. And if you're asking me, would I prefer cannabis to be a problem? Yes, I would.
Yeah, not many people kicking off, baked off their tits. And just, I mean, we always used to say, like in Wandsworth, that we kind of felt that it was let to go. I mean, when we'd get let out in the yard in Wandsworth, you'd walk out immediately 20 people smoking weed down the end. I mean, when I first went out, I was like, what's the score here? It's like international waters. But it was obviously like they knew it was going on, but it seemed that they like kind of did let it go a bit because, you know, I guess our interpretation was that they let it go because it meant that people were chilled. They weren't causing problems. Everyone had a bit of an easier life.
My view on that has always been, if you're doing it in front of me, that's disrespectful and I have to deal with it. But if you're doing it behind your door at night,
which I think, you know, I think that, look, some people might think that's controversial, but I think that's probably quite a sensible approach in there, where you've got guys that are potentially otherwise really frustrated, kicking off. You know, if there's something there that's just going to, like, you know, naturally relax them, I think that seems kind of quite sensible. Do you, like, similar to what we were talking about before, do you think the drug problem is solvable? Do you think there's just not the will there, or is there not the resources? What is it?
You could liken it to a game, if you like, and for every process we put in place to stop it coming in, someone will find a way to circumvent that problem. What does seem to be, again, possibly controversial, but there's more coming in now on solicitors' letters.
I was about to say, I had a phone call today from a prison saying, have you written this person a letter? And I said, no, I haven't.
It would be naive to say that not all of them are fabricated solicitors' letters. Some actually are solicitors' letters.
I say, Claire, you got a new car the other day, didn't you?
Yeah.
For legal reasons, she has not got a new car.
I really need one, though.
But it is very, very difficult to stop it completely. And in 27 years... there has always been a drug problem. Before I went in there, there was a drug problem. And after I've left, there will continue to be a drug problem. And I'm not sure there is a way to stop it completely because people are very, very clever. And I do sometimes wonder if people put their mind to trying to invent something useful, put their mind to that instead of just trying to find a way to circumvent the system and get drugs in, we'd be far better off. But we'll never stop it completely.
They've got a lot of time on their hands.
Yeah, very much so. And you liken it to a game, and we have to be reactive. It's very, very rare that we're able to be proactive because we're always one step behind.
I think we've covered a lot here, Andy, and I think we're kind of coming to the end, which is, it's been really, really interesting talking to you. And thank you so much for being kind of so honest. I think I've definitely, you know, I'm sure everyone listening has, but I've definitely found it really interesting to get kind of in-depth take from what it's like to be a prison officer and kind of all of those kind of bits. We've got, before you go, we've got two questions that we ask all of our guests. The first one, slightly more serious one, is money no object, red tape not an issue. What one change would you make to the criminal justice system?
Criminal justice system, probably more transparency and in sentencing, in ease of working out what's what, because no one really understands it. from my side anyway, unless you work in that department. I would also like for the money, maybe not the criminal justice system as such, but for me, a bugbear of mine is we're putting more and more people into prison. We're not funding it properly. And as far as I'm concerned, if you're going to put people into a prison, they should be looked after appropriately. And that means more access to clothing, which costs money, better facilities in the cells. That's not cupboards with doors hanging off or no cupboards at all. It's not mattresses that are really thin. And that's where the money should be going, not anywhere else. The justice system as such, I think, is fairly well funded, but the prisons aren't. And if we're talking about decency and humanity, that's where our money should be going, nowhere else.
Very interesting. Very nice to hear. For the Sun readers, who would be saying, weld the doors shut. So that's nice. And so, and our last question is, heaven forbid, you were to be locked up and you had to spend a year in a cell, who would your dream cellmate be? They can be alive or dead.
Someone with a bit more talent than Boats, but probably Bobby Moore. who could actually play football. But it would be nice to actually get time to spend with someone that has lifted the biggest trophy in world football, the only Englishman to ever do it. I think it's fascinating. I grew up watching him, listening to him on the radio when he was commentating the games until tragically he lost his life with cancer. But what a fascinating man that's had such an interesting career and a life.
Teach you a few keepy uppies while you're in there.
Exactly that. My talent has never been that good.
Andy, that's brilliant. Thank you so much again for joining us and walking us through the life of a prison officer. All the very best.
A pleasure. Thank you. Bye-bye.
I really enjoyed that. Like, what a top guy. Listening to it, I could just feel like it took me back to when I was in there and it reminded me of one of the officers who I really got on with. His name is Mr. Mack, and just Andy's just a very empathetic guy, and it's Mr. Mack was similar, and it just shows that there are good guys in there who are just doing their job, and if you respect them, they'll respect you back. So it was nice to hear his story, to be fair.
Yeah, they're like the pantomime villains, aren't they, in there? And I think I always think there's a bit of a parallel between actually your old profession, Boats, with footballers. You know, whenever you go and see like a footballer going to take a corner at the away end, and there's just 500 people calling them a cunt.
Yeah.
I think it's probably quite similar being a prison officer, going into work, knowing 100% that you're going to have someone screaming in your face at some point in your working day. It must be a very strange kind of existence in some ways, and how they keep doing it. And you know, like you say, the good ones that we experienced, they always came in, always had a smile on their face, just that ability to kind of brush that off.
See, he's a genuine guy. Really genuine guy.
Yeah,
very not an easy job. Well, that was brilliant. So thank you, Andy. What have you got for us this week, Rob? What's the love that we're getting from the public?
I'll hit you up with my weekly review. My review of the week this week comes from, we'll go nice short sharp one, from Ben Rugby on Apple Reviews. Remember, leave us a review when you get a second. Really enjoying the stories and interviews with a diverse set of guests. Very diverse this week. You know, I'm sure Ben will have enjoyed that one as well. Like the interplay between the three hosts. So there we go.
Success,
exactly. Couldn't have asked for more, really. Then, what else have I got for you? This week, our question that I hastily put together and fired out on Insta with my new editing skills. I asked our followers on Instagram at Banged Up Pod Cast, at Banged Up Podcast, get it right. I asked everyone where in the world you could name specific prisons or just countries where you would most like to or least like to be banged up.
This was off the back of Nives spending time in Rikers Island, right?
It was, exactly. So on that note, we've had Mizogart said, I'd like to say the USA. said, recognize a lot of people think about middle or far eastern prisons, but in America, said the cons and screws in America are clueless, egotistic, and overly violent animals. So they have not sat on the fence there with that one, which I think.
I wonder if that's personal experience.
Yeah, exactly. Probably someone else there not allowed back to America. Yeah, I think that's interesting. I think we do, you know, America obviously a very kind of modern country, but yeah, every time I've heard, you know, Nivez said, you know, when she was like kind of struggling to get sanitary products and stuff, wasn't she in one of those prisons she was in? Everywhere I've heard, everyone that I've heard of that has been to an American prison says they're just absolute shitholes. So one star review, wouldn't recommend.
Have you noticed that on Google Maps? If you ever put a prison in to Google Maps to find your directions, there it's got reviews.
Does it?
People stop. Yeah, people provide reviews on the prisons on Google Maps.
I've never.
It's
done
interesting.
That.
Go check it out. Yeah,
I've always been chauffeur driven to prisons when I've been, so haven't needed to check directions
in a high speed car. Posh boy. Yeah. With blue
with
flashing
a little pat
lights.
Lunch, yeah. who else? Sorry, I'm going to pull up Lily Henderson here. Has said no idea, but I know where I would want to be. Rochdale sounds like a dream. It was Rochester, Lily. Please pay attention. South America's featured quite heavily in the replies. Although that said, Mick the Miller has said, went to visit a jail in Bolivia. You can just stand by the gates and an inmate will come. You give the guard some money and they'll let you in. It seemed like a decent place if you had money, because you basically rent your cell. The smallest was shit, but the biggest was owned by Mr. Big, who had been caught with 4 tons of coke on his plane. He had a penthouse with a pool table, widescreen TV, and coke can machine on his balcony with garden furniture. Looked all right. And apparently they can get female visitors in whenever they want to. So there we go.
That's not jail. It's being cute.
From a reoffending perspective, we all want to be in Bastoy prison in Norway. That's got the lowest reoffending rates, most humane regime, apparently, with only 115 inmates or something. And
I think is this one where they do like work, they're basically kind of, it's on like an island or something.
Yeah,
I've heard of that. Yeah. And they basically just live normal lives.
Lessons so learn there. If you're thinking of where to do your crime.
Yeah. And then we've got one final review. They kept this one short. They've just put China. So
no reasons.
Donald Trump back on industry, snuck back on and left us a review. So there we go. So I think avoid America, avoid the Americas, or actually the other way around, avoid North America. Get to South America, get to Bolivia if you can. You get some nice B&Q furniture on your balcony.
I think the message, Rob, is avoid prison is really the message. I think we're drawing the best of a bad bunch of places
kids,
to be.
Kids, if you're listening, avoid prison.
Say no, yeah. Don't go to prison.
Well, you say that. Boats and I got a podcast out of it. So with a title sponsor, we haven't mentioned that yet this week.
Quick, better get in.
Look at that segue. I'm getting good at this. We can't see Paddy, but I'm sure he's enjoying this. Banged up 25 for 25% off all your coffee needs with Redemption Roasters.
Online and in store.
Do you know what they do that is delicious? And Boats, you don't like food, so you won't enjoy this necessarily either. But they do cronuts. Have you heard of cronut?
What's that?
It's like a donutted croissant.
Oh my goodness.
It's two superfoods combined. I think that is, they're about 9,000 calories a bite, but they're worth it.
How many PT sessions do you need to work that one off?
Minimum 10.
Minimum 10.
Boats, are you going to, maybe that's a little feature for one episode, is Boats, PT and Claire.
Let's do it after I've had a baby.
Yeah, fair enough.
Let's not do it now.
How convenient.
It would bring the baby on, I think.
Did you see our pros? I didn't know what to say.
You can have excuses or results, Claire. You can't have both, mate.
But yeah, no, I think that's good. A live PT session from Boats.
The next Joe Wicks.
I'm ready for it. Well, we've got another fantastic guest next week. We know him by MD,
Boats, tell us a bit more about him.
He's a young lad that I was in Haidan with, met him in there and just took a liking to him, just sort of see him as my little brother. And then he's got a very interesting story. I don't want to give it away too much, but he's a very, very good boy who's probably society would tarnish with one brush, but I'd say he's just misunderstood.
And another change of direction. We're just keeping the listeners guessing this year,
diverse,
aren't we?
Diverse.
Diverse.
Exactly.
Brilliant. Can't wait. And it's been great to catch up with you.
And you too.
Have a good week, team.
You take care.
Bye, guys.